Language is the normal way humans communicate. Only humans use language, though many other animals communicate in various ways. Human language has syntax, a set of rules for connecting words together to make statements and questions. Language can also be changed by adding new words, for example, to describe new things. Language may be done by speech or by writing or by moving the hands to make signs. It follows that language is not just any way of communicating. Humans also use language for thinking. Right.
I feel like I'm in a podcast with Steven Pinker.
I think his voice is more nasal, right? It's more like,
yeah.
It's more in the nose.
Is this going to be the episode where we just talk through our noses?
Yes. So this will be the language episode. And for some reason unclear to me, we have decided to record early in the morning.
Yeah. There was the feeling originally when we talked about this, which was complete hubris, that we would somehow be sharper. But I got off a plane like maybe 7.5 hours ago or something. And, you know, I have a cold and I think I sound like Tom Waits this morning. So let's see how that goes.
It's 7:10 a.m. This is the morning show with Small Differences, your favorite culture exchange program. How is your typical Norwegian morning, Chris?
Well, right now it's dark. Dark and alone. Do you mean what do I do when I get up in the morning? Or
yeah, did you change your morning routine when you moved there?
I guess I get up a little bit earlier because people here tend to start work a little earlier. I no longer have to commute across a huge city. I just walk like 20 minutes. Great. I guess there's more brown cheese in my life than there used to be. Not a bad thing.
So you said you came in by plane 7 hours ago. Where have you been?
I was in Paris over the weekend. It was a bit of a shock, actually. So I've been to Paris before several times. I know what it's like. I've never been to Paris after living in Norway for 6 months, and Oslo specifically. It is so, so dirty. Oh my God. Oh, there's dog shit in the streets. There's human piss in the streets. Everybody smokes. Even if you don't hang around with smokers, you end up reeking of smoke. Oh, oh. I'm sorry, I know we have some listeners in France, but get over it, people. That is a nasty city. Also, my cholesterol is on like 11 right now.
This isn't the typical Brit take on France, right?
I don't know what other British people think of it. I mean, like Paris has this reputation, right? That, you know, it's beautiful, it's romantic, blah, blah, blah. But there's also this thing called Paris syndrome. Do you know about that?
For the sake of the uninformed audience, I will just say no.
Okay. The thing with Paris syndrome is that you have built up Paris to this beautiful image in your head about what it should be. And then you get there and it is some of those things, but it's also huge and dirty and noisy and confusing. And people kind of lose their shit a little bit. And it's this kind of recognized symptom, where people just kind of have a bit of a meltdown. I don't think it just happens in Paris, but it's kind of a place that you've idealized. Apparently it's really common among tourists from the Far East who've built up Europe and Paris specifically into this sort of fabulous thing in their heads. So I'm too old and cynical to be having that experience. I'm just like, this is nasty.
And how was the weather like?
Very pleasant, cold, like -6, sunny, pretty nice.
We.
Everyone who's listening to this is going, -6, are you crazy?
Because in Oslo, it's like -30 or something, right?
Nah, it's like -3 right now.
Yay, climate change. Right. A bit of follow-up before we dive into the language episode. You have been here for 6 months already.
I have. I know. Doesn't feel like that. It feels like more and less.
Are there such a thing as an immigrant anniversary? Do we have cake or something?
I left the country. Does that count? Oh, yes, this is me. Eating in public places. I wanted to ask you about this. This is not follow up at all, really, but I was walking around this week and I was super hungry and I needed to be somewhere else and I was passing through a public space and I bought a little bun to eat. Actually, it was an enormous bun. It was like the size of my head. Don't eat buns the size of your head. A good rule for life, actually, generally. Don't eat things larger than your own head. But I was walking around through this public space eating a thing. And I thought from some people I detected a very slight amount of disapproval that I'd be walking around and eating food in a public space. And I know historically in the UK this was a thing that if you were well-mannered, you did not do. It was not done to walk around on the street or in another public space eating food. So I wanted to ask about that. Was it just me being oversensitive?
Huh. In the UK, would it be okay to... It would be okay to like sit on a bench and eat and so on, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think this was more that I was moving at speed through quite a crowded public area.
So eating, well, also eating and walking.
Eating and walking.
I don't think that is a thing which is frowned upon.
Okay, like, did it used to be?
No, I had never heard that before.
Okay.
Also, buns is pretty popular in Norway.
Right, right. Like I was being a patriot almost, yeah. Doing that, right?
So no, I can't say that. What I know, perhaps in Oslo, it's a bit more multicultural, I guess. So,
or maybe we're just fancy.
Or maybe you're just paranoid.
Who said that?
I wanted to give a shout out to listener Mike T, because he bothers pinging us on Twitter. It's really nice.
It's like he's even listening to the episodes. He's not just downloading them to be nice. He actually seems to listen to them.
I suspect that he just skips through.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Great episode, guys. Yeah.
Start, middle, and end, right?
Right.
This is a language episode. It's a big one.
It's huge. We could do a whole season just on this.
Because I would guess, as for small differences, perhaps language would be the least small difference between our cultures or countries or what have you.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. There is actually a different language being spoken in the office to the one that traditionally I would have used. So, yep, going to chalk that up as a big difference.
And I don't know in which end to start this, because there's so much to dive into.
All right. So let's talk about this. When you start work in a Norwegian office, when you come to Norway, when you move to Norway, obviously the single biggest thing is everyone is speaking a different language. And it's a very attractive language to listen to. It starts, when you start hearing Norwegian, it, like any foreign language, I guess, is just impossible to parse. And then over time, it becomes easier to break it up into things that mean things. One of the things that really grabs me about it is the intonation. Like having done a little bit of Swedish before, Swedish to me sounds like someone rolling a marble around in a big bowl. It's this kind of, it's like riding the TGV in France, right? It's this kind of big rolling. It does these swoops, but the swoops take an entire sentence or at least an entire subclause, you know? They're kind of these long, big, kind of gentle hills. And Norwegian is like a little bit more like someone hopping up and down trying to put a shoe on, like the other foot, you know? So it goes up and down more.
So being a native speaker, I don't have the privilege of hearing my own language from sort of the outside. So I guess we just have to break the ice here. We should be allowed to play and like do language stuff, right? So
yeah.
Could you mimic like the how it sounds?
Okay.
Just muck words or just to take the intonation. And this will be, I understand this will be probably a bit embarrassing, but...
Yeah. So, all right. I started off talking about Swedish, so let's do Swedish. I'm not going to speak any Swedish, probably because I can't remember how anymore, but... Yeah. right? That's Swedish, or an elephant riding a scooter, possibly. And Norwegian is more...
It's more staccato.
Staccato? Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, right. Right, it's the frequency of oscillation is... wow, that's pretty scientific nonsense sounding, isn't that right? But yeah, like, it's higher frequency, right? The stuff
frequency
goes up there
more. Frequency of oscillation, isn't it? Yeah, okay.
There you go, that's our episode title.
Because in English-speaking world, I would guess that Scandinavian language is represented by the Swedish chef for most people, or most Americans, perhaps, but... Bork, 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 right?
Right. Although apparently all the Swedes think he sounds Finnish.
Hmm.
Go figure.
So yeah, and are you able to adopt this intonation thing? Is it hard? Is it difficult?
Well, I'm just going to throw that one right back at you. I have no idea what I sound like to a native Norwegian. Does the intonation sound weird? Like, I have an accent, but I guess that's a different thing from, like, adopting this sort of going up and downness.
One drawback of doing an English podcast is that I don't really know yet, because I haven't spoken that much to you in Norwegian yet.
Right. But, yeah, writing doesn't count.
But just... Not to burst any illusions, but you still sounds a bit different, English or British.
I get that. Yeah. Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you is what things can someone who is learning Norwegian do to sound less British?
Sound less British.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Good note. I'm writing that down.
So this is it's a weird position, because as a native speaker, I would be some sort of expert on language, but I have not abstracted it enough to be a useful expert, I guess, yet.
Okay. How do you know when someone is foreign? Or is that a question that you can't answer for the same reason?
I would guess the latter, but the same would... I could put the same question to you, right? Couldn't I?
Yeah, like the vowels are wrong. The scansion is wrong, right? Like the way that the packets of text arrive, or the sounds, the packets of stuff arrive, is like, it's a bit Skype, right? It's a bit kind of wonky.
But I would guess that even in the UK there are multiple of English accents and ways of speaking.
Right, and we've talked about this before, but I think one of the things that probably doesn't vary a huge amount is the way that people, the sounds kind of compress and expand. Like, one of the things that I know about French is that every syllable gets the same amount of time pretty much in French, so it's incredibly regular. There's a name for this. Do you know what it is? I can't remember. Where... every single syllable lasts basically the same amount of time, but faster. And English does not do that. English is antithetical to that. Spanish does not do that. Norwegian doesn't seem to do that at all. But if you spoke to an English speaker in one part of the UK and then another part, I think broadly their behavior in this way would be the same, right? The patterns would be the same regardless of accent and dialect. So that's one of the things that I'm really working with, I guess, with Norwegian, is like, how do the packets of sound information arrive? Are they, you know, where do they compress? Where do they stretch out?
And as we have mentioned several times, that is a difficult task because there are so many dialects and ways to do it, I guess.
Right. I'm staggered. Like, this is one of the things that just... knocked me off my feet when I got here, by the wealth and richness of kind of dialogue and accent here. Like, you get that a bit in the UK, but, you know, if you work in London, you expect to work with people from all over, but it's still rare when you find yourself in a room with someone from the north of England or someone from Scotland. It's kind of noticeable. And I don't get that here at all. Everyone is just from everywhere. Everyone speaks like they're from everywhere. I can't even. it makes it really hard also to switch between accents, right? Like when I first started being in meetings here, and you'd have someone from the Oslo area, and you'd have someone from the West Coast, and you'd have someone from the South, and you'd have someone from the North, and you kind of start listening to them, and you're fine until the speaker switches and someone else starts talking, and then you have to go, there's this huge grinding of gears while you try and accommodate the fact that, like, this person doesn't say rr, they say rr, and everything else, and, you know, they don't say so, they say sho, and all of this other stuff. And if the conversation is moving really fast between people, you're basically just like doing these kind of gymnastics to keep up with what the heck is happening.
Also, Oslo, I guess Oslo is a city that you've moved to. Not to say that there aren't native... what is a native? Osloian?
I think Oslovian.
In Norwegian, that would be... I think it would be Osloborger. Which is a citizen of Oslo. Yeah. But, Oslo is a city that you moved to. So I guess the heterogeneity of dialects would be larger there.
What?
Compared to, for example, Bergen.
Yeah. I do notice that most people in your office in Bergen seem to sound more or less local. Not everybody, but more so. The thing is, though, like, London is the same. Everyone moves to London. There's a kind of a brain drain out of the rest of the country as people go to London and seek jobs. And you'd think there'd be more variety there, but not as much as here.
But if you moved to London, would you switch? Would you try to take up on the London accent, if there are any?
There are a couple. There's a kind of something approaching BBC English, and there's several. There's South London, there's North London, but there's kind of, I guess, stereotypically there's two, right? There's the BBC voice, and then there's something that's very, very street, London, and more South London than North, maybe. But I don't know, most people wouldn't switch, I think. Like, I'm a bit weird like that. After I live in a place for a while, I start to sound like I'm more from there. I never really sound like I'm from there. We just start absorbing the vowels and stuff. But would someone from Bergen come to Oslo and change how they sound?
No.
And would they deliberately not do that? Like, that was, you said that with such finality that it's like, no, this is like a political decision. I'm not giving up my West Coast accent from my cold, dead uvula.
Well, I don't think people from Bergen would do it, because there are a weird Bergen patriotism thing, and Oslo would be perhaps the last dialect to change to. But that being said, I think it's a thing for us that have sort of mixed dialects that haven't settled on anything. That some of us, because we are a group, I guess, would switch to a more Eastern Oslo dialect.
Right.
Because it's, I think it's perceived as more neutral or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I have friends who have done that.
You mean they moved here and they changed how they spoke?
Yeah, well, they moved a lot when they were young, or they weren't pleased with their dialect, because there are also Norwegians that think their dialect sounds stupid or something like that, and they would switch. And typically to the Eastern dialect for some reason.
Right. I have at least one colleague who modulates her regional accent and dialect to be more, I think, easily understood by colleagues in the Oslo office. And I have another colleague who, after a couple of drinks, sounds quite different.
Yeah, and when you say it, because my wife, for example, she speaks... She comes from some islands outside of Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a significant dialect.
Difference. What's the name of the show?
Exactly. There are a significant difference in dialects between Bergen and the places outside of Bergen. And she gradually has adopted more of a Bergen dialect. But when she speaks to her grandmother, she would switch back to the more thick dialect from that island, because the grandmother, of course, speaks it. It's interesting.
So we've got this weird variety, and I'm sure the UK is as rich in variety with dialects and accents as Norway, but it doesn't feel like that. And what I can't tell really is, like, is Norway weirder in that way? We could talk about orthography.
Yeah, and I must admit I'm not sure about, well, as I have previously mentioned, there are a connection between the it's going on the list, on the two formal written languages and dialects, right? Because New Norwegian or Nynorsk was a product of a collection of different dialects and sort of a synthesis between them to have a written language which was closer to how people actually spoke. So there's a connection, but it's sort of a minority language. So there are less people that write in New Norwegian than in Bokmål. So, yeah. But what do you want to know?
I don't know where to begin. It's just so kind of interesting and rich, you know? Like, we dealt with this maybe like in one of the first episodes, but just to recap, the fact that someone can speak with a particular accent or dialect or both, and that has no bearing on what they write, which of the two written systems they use. I mean, like, maybe if you're from the West Coast, you're more likely to speak in a particular way, and you're more likely to write down stuff with Nynorsk than you are Bokmål, but it's not certain. You write in Bokmål.
Yeah, I do. But I didn't originally.
Right, you switched.
Yeah, but now I live in a commune that, or what's commune in English?
I think municipality.
It's one of those words I cannot... municipality. Right, so I live in a place that their new Norwegian is the bureaucratic language, because townships and cities actually have to sort of choose also in which written language they want to communicate in, mainly.
They can't do both?
Yeah, they have to do both. If you work in the public sector in Norway, you have to answer all like emails and letters in the language which sort of the first one was written in. So if you get a email in Bokmål, you should answer in Bokmål and New Norwegian. If it's New Norwegian.
Is that just considered polite? Is it law? What?
I think it's actually law, but I don't think you will be prosecuted if you don't.
Okay.
But I think it's specified in job ads and stuff like that you have to be fluent in both or something.
Wow. And do you think it's easy to be fluent in both? Would you describe yourself as fluent in both?
Yeah, I probably would. So everyone has both in school. And it is a topic of political controversy. But everyone has to get through it. So in theory, everyone is sort of fluent in both, but many people think that New Norwegian is harder or something.
Okay.
It's more difficult.
Harder, like hell.
Well, I think it's mainly a product of having sort of your main language and have to learn another, I think it's the same as that a second language would be harder, or for some people who do not like to learn language or do not grasp like grammars and find it difficult. I think it's the same thing.
Right. Do you know how old you were when you became aware, I guess, that there are two ways of writing down Norwegian?
I think I knew from the start.
I mean, I guess, like, no one made you write anything down until you were like 4 or 5, right?
Yeah, and I think I probably was aware, because I started with New Norwegian, and of course, much of what I read was in bokmål.
Do you remember finding it confusing at all that there were kind of two ways to spell a thing? I guess you weren't very old though, so that's a hard question.
I don't think it was confusing, no.
One of the things I wonder about a lot is what it does, disclaimer, former psychologist, blah, blah, is what it does to people's brains growing up to have this duality. I mean, there's quite a lot of study, I think, of people and children, especially who grow up bilingual, and the extent to which that's a healthy experience. Like when I was a kid, it wasn't considered a good idea, which is why I can't speak much Czech. Otherwise, I would. But I think now it's generally recognized to be sort of quite useful for kids, to provide them all sorts of interesting possibilities in later life. I haven't read a great deal about this, but a little bit. For starters, if you are exposed to different phonemes from your kind of mother tongue, so different sounds in the first 12 months, it allows you to continue to be able to hear those sounds later in life. So I guess there's like a super critical period for that. And what that makes it easier to do is learn other languages where maybe those sounds are a factor. And maybe even learn other languages again where those sounds don't exist, but it's given you like a wider choice of options. It's like you have more colors available or something.
I think that sounds plausible. And I'm not really sure that the Norwegian situation, if that could be called bilingualism, I guess that we learn English from an early age perhaps would count somewhat, but...
So you write in three languages, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Four, actually.
What's the fourth?
German.
Nice.
Because in Norwegian schools, you of course, you have to learn bokmål and New Norwegian. You have English, and later you will have German or French or Chinese or whatever.
Okay, so just sidebar. Wow.
Don't you have a second language in the UK, right? Of course you have.
Yeah, but so if you grew up in Wales, North Wales, I'm not sure it's the whole of Wales, but maybe if you grew up in North Wales, you're quite likely to start school with Welsh as the primary language. If you, but not necessarily, and there are English language schools. I have two cousins who grew up there, and one of them went to an English language school and one of them went to a Welsh language school primarily. You still learn the other one, obviously, but I don't think in the English language ones, I don't know how much Welsh you have to do, maybe not very much. In Scotland, the people used to speak Gaelic in Scotland. It almost died out. I think they're trying to bring it back, but the way that they're bringing it back is by doing things like labelling the stations, the railway stations, in the other language. I'm not sure there's a great deal of teaching of it. In school, generally in the UK, you learn a second language typically in high school, but you're like 12 at that point, and your brain is halfway to being an adult. And it seems really late. And I'm sure there are some schools where you can learn a foreign language sooner, but it wasn't the default when I was growing up, and I'm not sure it's the default now. And the worst thing that happened, the absolute worst thing that happened, was a few years ago, the UK government, and I think this primarily affects England and Wales, I'm not sure about Scotland, but the UK government said, okay, you don't have to study a language past 14 anymore. You can do like 2 years of a foreign language and then you can drop it. You don't even have to get like the basic kind of qualification in that. You don't have to sit the exam anymore. And I was just horrified by this. Like, it's so useful for people to learn a foreign language because you're not just learning a language, you're learning about a different culture. You're learning about a different way of doing stuff. You're learning all of this stuff that's kind of helpful to be a citizen of the world, right? And to just say, yeah, you know what, you can do 2 years of that at age 12 when your brain's like largely hardened and become this useless calcified shell. Slight paraphrase, well, slight exaggeration, but, you know, not hugely. Yeah, that's fine. 2 years is great. You're done here. Everyone speaks English in the world now anyway. It's fine. Don't worry about it. And it's not to say that no one takes a language past that, because lots of people do. Lots of kids do, right? They go on and some of them even study at university. But to say that that's 2 years in high school is now enough. Oh, can you tell I'm a little bit exercised about this?
Yeah, but related to this, and not to impose any lingo existential crisis, but the fact that learning a second or third or whatever language when you are young are more easy than when you are older. I must admit that I find that a bit discouraging for my own sake.
Say more.
Well, it's like you will never be proficiently fluent or something like that. So I studied a bit of Japanese in university, and it was crazy hard, not to understand the grammar and all that, but to learn all the vocabulary and to sort of get somewhat fluent, or like to think in Japanese. I wasn't close at all, but how is that for you as a grown up and learning a new language? Do you think about that?
Yeah, about the difficulty of coming to it like really late.
Yeah, but but then again, I guess you are sort of a black swan here because you have learned really, really quickly. So I guess there's hope.
I guess, yeah. You can. It is possible. well, thank you for saying that. I've learned really quickly. There are a lot of holes. Wow, the metaphor that jumped to mind was a pretty bleak one. When the body makes cancer tumors, it throws together the infrastructure really badly, like workmen putting up a kitchen too fast and doing it carelessly. But I feel the same way about my Norwegian, is it's full of holes. Like, I can't reliably write down the words from 1 to 20. You know, there are lots of things I don't know. I don't know the gender of loads of the nouns.
Well, so, I don't either.
What? You're kidding me.
Yeah, the nouns and gender thing. Perhaps we just could derail and go into that. Because you had some questions.
I do have questions about this. So, traditionally, right, Norwegian has three noun genders, masculine, feminine, neuter, which is like German, and I think a few other languages as well. Some languages don't do gender, like English doesn't. Some languages do masculine, feminine. Swedish used to do masculine, feminine, neuter, and then it collapsed masculine and feminine into common gender, which is the same as you can do for Norwegian now, right? So the situation with Norwegian is technically three genders, but you can collapse two of them down. So you can basically say masculine and feminine nouns are all N something or other.
But only in bokmål.
But, you can't do it in Nynorsk.
I don't think so.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I think so that would be a point of, yeah, where people who mainly write in bokmål, who try to write in Nynorsk, would find it difficult, because the conjunctions, or how you conjugate the subject or the nouns in Nynorsk would be sort of different from feminine to masculine words.
Do they change gender as well, or is it just that you have to preserve the three different genders?
I think there are some gender swapping going on.
Oh,
I can't really come with examples from the top of my mind, but...
Wow, okay. So one of the questions I had about this, right, was when I started learning Norwegian, the simplest thing for me to do is just use two genders. So just collapse everything possible down, because I'm learning to write in bokmål as well. So it's fine to say en bok, a book, instead of ei bok. So the easiest thing as a beginner is to start and just have en and et words, right? Masculine, feminine, and neuter separately. But the longer I learn, the more I'm like, I don't know why, but I really, really want to use all three genders. It just seemed really important. It's not like I woke up one day and decided that I wanted to do this, but it just seemed like I wasn't doing it right. So I started conscientiously, and I don't get it right all the time, trying to use masculine, feminine, neuter. So like you would in Nynorsk, I guess. But a thought that I had was, well, what does this connote? Like, some of my colleagues use the bokmål convention where you just collapse them down, so you've got N words and et words, and some of them use all three. What does it mean about me if I pick one or the other? What are the implications?
I don't think there are any.
Okay.
To be honest. I had never heard or thought differently.
So it's not like someone using only N and et would be like, I don't know, more posh or more East Norway, or...
I guess it would be a feature of your dialect. So it would just be a feature of your dialect. I don't think it would connote anymore, to be honest.
Well, then this is a question for me that is troubling. Like, I need to find dialect. I need to find a home in Norway to speak from, in a way. At the moment, I feel like I'm pulling bits and pieces from all over. And is it inevitable as a foreign language speaker of Norwegian that I'm going to end up taking a bit from this part of the country and a bit from that part of the country and a bit from, you know, like one of the things that happened very quickly was that I decided I was going to roll my R's. So I was going to make like a R noise. Because I'm from Scotland, and you know, that's what we do, I guess. It doesn't really come across in English very strongly, but it is there. It's a thing that I do. Or should I have used like a soft R, like they do in German and in French? And that's a coast thing, right? Like, if you're from East Norway, you're pretty likely to roll your R.
No.
No?
Well, the
help.
The skarra R, right?
Can you explain what that is?
No, because I can't do it, probably.
Yeah, I noticed that when you said that, you didn't do it. Skarra R.
Because, well, where I first learned to speak in Ålesund, which is in the northern part of West Coast Norway, I think they use the rolling R. And when I moved a bit south to Karmøy, they used the skarra R. And I couldn't adopt it, right? But the skarra R is actually taking over the West Coast.
I hear it a lot from your colleagues.
Yeah.
Can you,
so it's spreading.
I was going to say, can you like do it? Can you sort of explain for our listeners who are like, what is this thing? I don't get it. What's the difference between all these R sounds?
I wish I could give you the more phonetic lesson, because it has to do with where you place it on in your mouth, right? So,
right.
The rulle R and the skarre R. It's more back in your mouth, right?
Right, right.
And the rulle R is in the front, I guess.
Right. Yeah, your tongue does a kind of rolling thing to make the noise. You have to have the tongue at the front, and I think to make the noise, you have to it has to kind of go back.
It's the difference between rader or rada, I guess.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. So I guess the skar noise would be like way more south of the UK, like London. One of the things I like to rib my husband about, he's from kind of more south than the North England, and he says car instead of car. And you know, you get even sharper versions of that depending on where you're from. Car, in some parts of Scotland. I like to rib him about the fact he can't pronounce the letter R.
And yeah, so but if you go for the skarra r, what's the English term?
I don't know. There is a linguistic term. I don't know what it is. Sorry.
Anywho, if you go for that, I guess you should probably choose one dialect from the western part of Norway, which perhaps is not strategic because you are in Oslo. So you have to find yourself a West Coast friend.
I guess so. It would be super weird though, wouldn't it? Like, or is that just Oslo-centrism talking? The idea, like, you come in to Norway and you start, like, I think it would be pretty weird to my colleagues if I decided I was going to adopt, like, a Bergen accent.
Yeah, but you... Aren't you pretty weird for your colleagues already, Chris?
You're going to have to ask them. I shouldn't second guess that. Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Embrace your weirdness.
I am. I'm fully in touch with my weirdness. I'm ready to weird.
That would be truly Norwegian.
Yeah. Politically, I would love, actually, to speak with a Bergen accent. Like, coming from Scotland, we are all about the kind of the plucky underdog kind of thing. Like, it's a, you know, and having a little bit of a chip on our shoulder. It's what we do. So, like, I would have no problem at all with that. I don't think it comes naturally. I did German for a few years at school, and, like, I can hear a lot of German in the Bergen accent. And it perhaps wouldn't be hard for that, but it wasn't the first thing that happened. And maybe I've broken myself forever with that. Maybe learning Swedish before was dumb because there's a lot more rolled R's in Swedish generally. I'm sure there's some exceptions, but for the most part, it's a very much more R-rolling language. And maybe I've basically doomed myself forever to be an East Coast Norwegian now.
But you would have to decide soon, right?
Well, maybe it's too late.
I don't know.
Do I sound like I should be from somewhere particular in Norway, apart from Scotland, obviously?
I thought about this, and as you said, I think a West Coast dialect would be fitting for a Scot.
I'm going to have to change how I do my R's. Actually, well, you don't do it, and you still sound like a West Coaster, sort of.
Yeah, to you.
Well, sort of. You sound, yeah, it's complicated. You sound like you're from the north as well, so it's, you, yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah. Indeed. I guess if I did some effort, I could probably talk more like I did when I was younger.
Do you want to try that now, or is that just putting you under too much pressure?
I could. It would be mumbo jumbo for our non-Norwegian listeners, but...
We should put some sound clips in, by the way, so people can actually hear this.
So I just have to switch the... Give me a sentence.
The train pulled out of the station and disappeared.
Well, I think we haven't that many trains in the west, wasn't part of Norway, so it doesn't sound natural to me.
I went.
Let's do it with a boat.
Okay, the boat sailed out of the harbour and disappeared.
It's really hard because I'm tuned into English now. Båten, that would be Bergen accent. important setter fra Kajan. That would be the Bergen, right? How was the Ålesund accent? Ålesund, det er litt mer Steven Pinker-aktig. Borten, nei, I just keep falling into the Bergen dialect. I'm sorry.
You're gonna have to fill air until I stop laughing.
Yeah. Does it sound funny?
It really? Does. It's well, it's to hear you do it because it's tonally it's really far away from where when you speak regular Norwegian with me. It's really
Yeah. Because well, in Ålesund it's more in the nose, right? And then I moved to Volda, which is like 2 hour drive south of Ålesund, and they have more jeg kjem fra Volda. Det litt mer der nede, right?
Right.
And then you have Bergen. Det litt mer sånn, right? And this is really weird because I lived 10 years in Karmøy and I still can't do the Karmøy dialect.
Why not?
It's difficult.
Is it just too weird?
Yeah. They have this Skadde ad and yeah, I can probably put in a soundbite, but
I'll do it. That'd be great for people to hear. I wanted to talk about, well, I didn't want to talk about Sapir-Whorf hypothesis because, like, that's a whole world of pain, right? But I should name check it. Well, having name checked it, I should explain enough about what it is. Like, everyone who knows anything about this is now yelling at their phone. But the overstated description of Sapir-Whorf is that the language that you speak can mold the way that you think, and actually, that's an overstatement, and it was never entirely claimed that, but we'll put a link in the show notes to explain, well, to the Wikipedia page where it kind of describes that a little bit. But it is interesting to me what, like I said before, it's interesting what happens to people's brains if they grow up with not just one dialect of Norwegian or one way of thinking, but two ways of writing it down. And then they learn English, and then maybe they learn German or another language in school. And one of the movies that I've seen recently was Arrival. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, you got to see it.
I want to.
See it in the cinema if you possibly can. The sound is amazing. The sound is a huge part of the movie. So you want to see it with something that's got really good speakers. I don't want to talk too much about it if you haven't seen it, and I don't want to drop any spoilers for anybody. So I just want to say that it riffs on that idea quite a lot, the idea that learning a new language can change how you think. And I sort of wonder about what is happening in my brain right now. And is it different than if I had learned Norwegian as a kid? And what are all of you like? It's still extraordinary to me that, like, pretty much everyone I work with is bilingual at least. Some of them speak more languages fluently than just two. And in the UK, that would be remarkable if everyone in your office was bilingual. And I just wonder, like, what does it do to everybody's thinking? What does it do to their philosophies about life? What does it do to them as a person? And I realise that as someone who is who meets this description, it's probably impossible for you to comment objectively. But I'm just wondering, do you have any thoughts about this?
I think I pretty much have the same questions, to be honest. And what I know that is that, like, linguists in Norway that are main users of new Norwegians, there's a, I hope they don't listen to this, but I think there's a bit of a bias there that they tend to make studies that favor bilingualism.
Okay.
They at least promote that kind of work more, I guess. But I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that learning multiple languages and so on would be favorable in some way.
At the very, very least, to just have insight into the idea that the culture that you're in is not the only culture, and the ways of thinking and talking that you have are not the only ways. That seems really important for, like, the world, for people to have a notion that not everyone is like me, and that's okay.
So I was pretty old. Well, it wasn't until university I truly started to appreciate learning other languages. In school, it was sort of the thing you did or had to do.
What changed?
I think I just matured or something. I found it a bit hard to concentrate on the grammar stuff and so on in school. And also we had a pretty noisy class in ungdomsskolen when we were between 12 and 16, go figure. My training there was actually kind of bad. So this is when you, I guess, would learn the most English grammar. And I really never had a proper English grammar training.
How did you learn English in school then?
Well, we had English in from, I guess, we were 9 or something. I think they start even earlier now. But more on the formal grammar and stuff like that would be come later. So I have to sort of learn it again afterwards when I got interested. But my point... so I mentioned that I started learning a bit of Japanese in university, and I think that was the first point I really appreciated how learning a new language also opened some doors or windows into another reality.
Is there anything in particular that you remember about that time that sort of opened your eyes or changed your mind about anything? Or,
well, I guess what I sort of understood that there are some common like problems or challenges that we try to solve with language, and we do it somewhat differently. And one of the most fascinating things about Japanese is that they use different, for example, they use different count words or postfixes to say something about what you are counting. So is it something flat or big or cylinder formed or, yeah. So it's sort of really effective in some ways. You can tell a lot by saying less.
That sounds very efficient.
Yeah, it is. But also that they put their verbs at the end of the sentence.
That's very German.
Yeah, so you can go pretty long before you really know what the sentence is about if you don't know the context.
It's like that story about the UN, right, where someone's getting simultaneous translation in their ear as someone else is giving a speech, and there's this long, long pause. And the interpreter, after a while, says, I guess it's someone from Germany who's giving the original speech. And after a while, this person's got in their ear the interpreter saying, I'm waiting for a verb.
And as we mentioned last time, German sentences can be really, really long.
But they're worth waiting for, right?
Always.
I want to know if German jokes are different now. Because it makes you wait for the verb. I want to know if there's more suspense or different suspense in waiting for the punchline. I want to know if it's harder to construct a joke in German because you have to think about the verb placement.
It's obvious to me that we need to have the German special episode of Small Differences with a German person.
Den Tyske Episoden.
Die Deutsche Episode. No, it would be probably the Deutsche Teile. I don't know. I don't speak German.
Abschnitt?
Yeah, perhaps. Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, if you've tuned in to learn about Norwegian...
We're deeply sorry. Beklager. Right.
Es tut uns leid.
Pardon.
Gesundheit.
Simmermasen.
When we're talking about accents, it's not fair that we should talk about me the whole time. Let's talk about you, Knut. Knut's English accent dilemma. British, American, or just go full-on Norwenglish? Tell us about your pain.
Well, as I said, when you go to university, you have all these people who are actually good at language. And or they're doing well in language, I don't know. I'm not really one of them. I can pretend, but yeah, it's sort of a huge mess for me. And one thing that people do is to take on a more British accent, especially if they have been on exchange to the Oxbridge universities, right? And so that was a thing that I for a long time thought that I probably should do while I still considered, I still plan to be in the academy. So I guess I started to do the like instead of saying well, it's hard to both reflect on how you say things while saying things. It just stops. But
welcome to my world.
Yeah, I guess. Yes, so I started to try to take on a more British way of saying things. Right, but meanwhile, I listen mostly to American speaking podcasts and stuff like that. So I think it falls more natural to take on an American accent if I should take on an accent at all.
Well, should you? What are you buying when you do this? Like, what does it get you?
And yeah, and then there you have. I think it's there is among Norwegian intellectuals there are a stance that sounding Norwegian while speaking English is not cool or favored. You should try to take on an English accent, mainly American or British. If you take on an Indian accent, that would be probably not good. But yeah, so there are a bit of a social pressure to not speak Norwenglish. And for those who don't know what Norwenglish is, it's somewhat how I speak, but it could be done even broader. So
do it.
Again, I have to have something to say. I guess you would speak more like this. And use the Norwegian phonemes and so on, right? So we will put in some clips of prominent Norwenglish speakers in the podcast episode. And what Norwenglish speakers also do is to put in norske words where they don't remember the English words. That would be pretty annoying to listen to for 1.5 hours, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe it's just me, but I think it's delightful.
Yeah,
and hilarious.
It's cute, but I guess, or something.
It is cute. It's funny because I know you're putting it on. I imagine that if you are Norwegian and you have the perception that everybody in your country is speaking like this to people who are British or American, say, like you end up, I'm sure there's a link in here somewhere to that Twin Peaks clip, right? Where, hello, young pretty girl, you know, that whole thing, right? And it's kind of, it becomes a cliche. And I guess you all are kind of keen to avoid that.
I think there's a sneaking class thing going on here because I think it sounds uneducated.
Really?
Yeah. And I guess speaking in a more British or American accent would be more educated. And if you are a person, for example, if you are the leader of the Nobel Committee, there's an expectation that you should sound educated. I think that's the thing.
So just following up this educated thing, you said the other day that the British accent sounds more educated. Why? At the risk of alienating all our American listeners.
I don't think any British accent. But the more BBC RP version of it.
And it sounds more educated to a Norwegian.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know why?
I guess your image building has been effective.
Huh, go us. We have a brand. Nice.
Or perhaps it has something to do with where we hear that kind of accent. It would be typically in television, documentaries, I don't know.
Okay, so the kind of somewhere between David Attenborough and, well, not the Queen, but...
Yeah.
Very kind of strong institutional voice, right? Like, this is the voice of authority and reason.
How much space is there between David Attenborough and the Queen?
Hopefully some. An appropriate amount. In the whole spectrum of British accents, not very much. His accent is fairly posh. Her accent is implausible.
Right. So, yeah, back to my dilemma.
Right.
I think I have a long way to the British accent, if I should go in that direction. But I'm afraid that my American accent would sound very put on. At least now, because I have to overdo it somewhat, I guess.
What would you give us a half a sentence in American Knit English?
American accent. So it would be more like this, I guess.
Back to Steven Pinker.
Is that Steven Pinker? Yeah, I guess. Human language has a syntax, a set of rules for connecting words together to make statements. Right, yeah, so... Could you listen to a podcast like this? I don't think this would be my American accent, truly, but perhaps.
I prefer regular Knut. It's a little weird.
It's more low key, right?
Right.
But I guess I could transform this, whatever this is, to take on like more words and pronunciations. In an American way.
Would there be right. anything that would make you want to do that?
I think I should strive for some consistency. Perhaps. I don't know. Perhaps this is my thing.
as someone whose accent doesn't sit anywhere, I'm going to say I think it's okay to have an accent that's not from anywhere. I think it's okay to be mid-Atlantic a lot of the time. I think that's increasingly acceptable. I think time was people wanted to put you in a box, not you personally, and not a literal box, but it would have been the case that you should sound like BBC English, or you should sound, if you're from the regions, you should sound like you're from the regions, or if you're from America, you should sound like that. But I think increasingly there's a lot of mixing of the streams, right? Like it's become more common in the UK. Actually, this is a really interesting question. It's become more common in the UK for kids to grow up with a more kind of mid-Atlantic accent because of the amount of American media that they consume. And because despite the general drift of things, apparently America is still cool. Is that something you can relate to from the Norwegian perspective?
I think so. But I think it comes down to, I think I want to speak more consistent because I don't want to have to think all the time and be self-aware on how I speak, because I want to communicate ideas and thoughts, not always stumble on the words and pronunciations, right? I think it has something to do with that.
You hear really consistently, like, wow, that was a pull from Norwegian. Det høres konsistent ut. I don't hear inconsistency in how you speak, but I don't know how much work is going on behind the scenes.
My brain is melting right
really?
Now.
You're doing well. Somewhat. You're doing very, very well talking about language in a language that is not your first language.
Well, doing this every week for 7 weeks has been 8 weeks. Weeks actually, it has been has done wonders for me.
Are you more comfortable than you were?
Yeah.
Excellent. Then it's worth doing.
Well, comfortable in some ways, in other ways not. we are going on a team trip this Thursday.
Where are you going?
Balestrand.
Why?
Team building. So I guess there probably will be bathing. Hence my uncomfortability in this podcast. Right.
Wait. You're going somewhere where the word ends in strand and you're going bathing. Please tell me the bathing will be indoors.
We will see. It depends on how much team building we will do.
Is team building a euphemism for drinking?
Yeah. Probably.
Okay. Go nuts. So we've talked a lot about the kind of the overt things in language, like how stuff sounds. We focused a lot on the superficial, but there's loads to dive into as well about the less obvious, the less superficial, and the kind of the deeper stuff, right? So a thing that I notice a little bit from being here is that there seem to be some commonalities between British culture and Norwegian culture in terms of understatement. So if a British person says, that's a bit much, what they actually mean is, that is outrageous. That's just no good. Like, not always, but that's a bit much. It's kind of classic British understatement, right? And I've noticed in Norwegian that people say that kind of thing as well. I can't bring a phrase to mind, but there is definitely a sense of saying something is a little bit too, when actually you mean, whoa, that is way out of line. Would you care to comment as a native Norwegian?
You're constantly putting me on the spot here. But
that's the point of the podcast.
Yeah, I guess. I think we have the exactly same phrase in Norwegian. Det var litt mye.
How is it used? In the same context?
Yeah. But not so often, I guess. I'm not sure, because I don't know the frequency in English either. Yeah, we have understatements. But I think it's also, there's something in you, in the way you say it. So it could be an understatement, but it could also not be an understatement. I think we discussed this before in Slack, but do you remember what you asked about?
I think it was exactly that kind of phrasing where the Norwegian was something like "det var litt for mye" or something like that, where you could read it as "that was a little bit too much," or you could read it as "that's a bit much." And it's all in the intonation. In English, it's all in the intonation and the context as well. So I guess what I took away from that is that that's a thing that both languages do.
But I think the words "litt" and "lite" should spark some alarms. I think those would appear often in understatements.
Is it a very Norwegian thing to do understatement? I don't hear people exaggerate a lot in Norwegian.
If you would go for the Bergen dialect, you don't need to bother with understatements. That's... they are known to be very confrontative and say it as it is.
Okay.
But if you go a bit north to Sunnmøre, it's very understated, and you can never know what they actually mean. and if you go further north, it would be come back to not be understated at all again. And people in East Norway, I don't know. I don't think they have understatements. It's more like they never say what they truly mean at all.
Oh, so there's a perception that people in East Norway are kind of indirect.
Well, now there is a perception. But I don't know if it's representative. Maybe it's just me.
At the same time, I recognize a lot of things that are kind of, let's say, exaggeration, I guess, from English. Like, I don't hear a lot of exaggeration and hyperbole at all in the office, but a word that comes up a lot is utrolig, so, like, unbelievably, just used to modify or exaggerate something, like, you know, you would say in English, it's unbelievably cold. And all you mean is, it's completely believable, it's just quite cold.
Yeah, exactly.
So... there's a little bit of that, I guess. But in moderation.
Oh, that's Sweden.
With lagom.
Right. I would guess we will come back to more language-related topics as we move in to the next season. No. If we adopt a British... television structure, we would be way into second season already.
Are British TV shows really short?
Yeah.
How many episodes?
Well, like Sherlock, it's like 4 episodes.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I'm watching The Crown at the moment. I think that might have 10.
Yeah, but I think that there's some American influence going on there. But yeah, it would be 10. Like, but American TV shows, that they're more like 20.
Right. Like classically like 22, 23, right?
Yeah.
But then like all the cool shows, the new ones, those are shorter. Like they're an hour and they're like 10 episodes, right? So maybe we should go with a sort of 10. I don't know.
Let's do, yeah.
Anyway.
I guess we have time for last language related topic, namely words and class. And I guess listener Alice Pratt at Alice Pratt asked us about like classifiers between class in Norway, right?
Right.
Do you have a British example?
Yeah, there's a ton. There's a whole thing, and I of course. I'm sorry, were you asking me about Britain and class? That's a whole... why are we doing this at the end of the episode?
But just perhaps a teaser for later or something.
Sure. one of the examples that Ellis gave was a napkin or serviette. So this is this bit of paper or cloth that you put on your lap when you eat dinner. Even the word dinner, I can't even say dinner because dinner is a word that connotes class to some extent. Like, what do I mean when I say dinner? Do I mean an evening meal? Do I mean, if I was super posh, I might say supper. I've just gone down this death spiral of class-related vocabulary in the UK now. Right. But yeah, the words that you use to connote, to mean a different thing in Britain give a lot away about your upbringing, your quote-unquote class, which part of the country you're from. The whole supper, tea, dinner thing is like a classic. It can give away a lot. I think the choice of word in combination with your accent is the killer in the UK. So you can use a word and it will have entirely different meanings, but those are judged based on your regional accent.
Yeah, and we had somewhat the same thing in Norway, but I think as for class, it's not that salient anymore. But you have the conception that people can speak the dialect nicely or more posh and more rural, right? But as for word choices, that's a hard one. The only thing I came up with, which is also not that present anymore, is the difference between toilet and dass. Could you explain?
So these are words for the toilet, the loo, the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
And toilet sounds very formal to me. It sounds like the kind of thing you would see in public spaces, or it's the kind of the neutral language of sort of polite authority, I guess. I don't hear people say das. I hear people say do. What's the difference?
Do is more neutral. Das is more, it's not rude, but
crass. Crude.
Yeah, perhaps.
Is it ruder than saying the shitter?
I don't think it's ruder, perhaps on the same level, but...
Is das like loo?
I think it's between shitter and loo somewhere.
Episode title.
Between the shitter and the loo. But come to think of it, I don't think you can... I'm trying to think if... people in Norway mind as much anymore. You could be crass and people would sort of don't mind. I'm probably biased or a product of my upbringing or something, but
would like you, if you were just talking to a friend or a colleague, would you use toilet?
No, I would use tuss. I wouldn't mind.
So is it really just a context thing? It's not a class thing?
Now it is.
What was it like before?
More a class thing.
How?
Or being polite.
I'm left with the impression that Norway has never had a class thing.
Oh, well, that of course we had a class thing.
When?
Up until the 80s, I guess it would be more present but decreasing. The oil changed everything.
Say more?
No. You can't say more. That has to come later, I guess. Because we are 1.5 hour in.
We got to pick that up another day because the oil changed everything is like, that's an episode title. That's the whole thing. All right, let's talk culture.
Let's talk culture. Yeah, culture pick of the week. I chose Lillehammer. Do you know it?
The place or the show?
Yeah.
Not really and not really.
So Lillehammer is, I think it's on Netflix. It's a show about this guy called Steve Van Sant. He was in the mafia, right? And he has been moved to Norway in this place called Lillehammer, which is known for the... Winter Olympics in 94, I guess. There he has the immigrant experience, namely from an American perspective. And it kind of hit the nail on the head on some things. and some other things not. But
can you give examples?
I wish. Well, there's a lot on the welfare system, which for an American would be very alien, I guess. And it's funny because he's very much a protagonist. So he is this American who cuts through the bureaucratic bullshit in Norway, and so on.
Recommend it?
Yeah, I would recommend it. Yeah, because I think in much of a characterized way, it would say something about how it is to be an immigrant in Norway.
Cool.
Watch the first episode.
Okay.
If you haven't.
I haven't yet.
And give us a review next time.
I can't believe this show comes with homework. My pick. I don't know how to pronounce this guy. Yaga Yazist or Jaga Jazist or Yaga Jazist?
good question. In Norwegian, it would be Jaga Jazist.
So this is a guy. It's just one guy, right?
No. It's not just one guy. I'm sorry to arrest you, but...
Okay, I need to go read.
It's more like a family. It actually is a family because they're three siblings, right? The Horntvedt siblings.
You're going to have to write that word down for me.
Yeah. but they are... If you look on Wikipedia, you can see the list of members.
Cool.
And past members, which... And Copas, I guess, most of the Norwegian jazz scene. Go on.
Having
this
been
is your pick.
Having been thus schooled, yeah, I should do my homework. Again with the homework. Yeah, this was a thing. So I think it was you who introduced me to this. One of the nice things about starting work in a new place is that you meet a whole bunch of people who know stuff you don't know. And one of the first things I did was join the Slack channel where we talk about music. And I asked for recommendations. I had some work to do. I wanted something without lyrics so that I could focus on my work. And I wanted something with some kind of regular beat. And so I asked, and you came back with, well, whatever you do, don't listen to this. I think it's the Starfire album. And I misread it initially. And I thought, oh, great, a recommendation. I went off and listened to it. And it was actually perfect. I think you said don't listen to it because it changes the time signature and it changes the beat and it moves all over the place. Simultaneously, it is the best album to work to. It's my most listened to at the moment while I'm working. There's something very flow-like about the state that you get into while working to it. And for people who've never heard of this, it's, I don't know how to describe it. It's electronic jazz. I don't know what the genre is.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. But the thing that just takes it up to another level is that then he recorded an album live with the Britain Symphonia. And instead of just being this kind of quite electronic jazz kind of stuff, it just takes it to a whole other level. It's orchestral and jazzy and a little bit electronic. And it's just a fantastic album. It's really fun and really versatile and kind of a little bit genre defying, and it's super fun to listen to. So and Norwegian, so get out there.
Yeah, it's cool that you picked that. It's one of my favorite bands actually, and they have played for a long while, since 94 actually.
Yeah, I looked at their Spotify backlog and I was just like, oh goodness, this is a lot of music.
And many Norwegian musicians have played with them or in the band.
Cool.
Let's go into the word of the week.
Venstre hånds arbeid.
Yeah.
This came up during the week. I think you mentioned it. And literally, if I'm getting this right, left-handed work, or work done with the left hand. And initially when I saw this written down, I thought, is that like a backhanded compliment in English? But on further inspection, it seems like it isn't. It seems like it's the equivalent of the British cack-handed, which I now remember that I meant to look up and didn't. Cack is a kind of sometime British word for shit. And I guess historically one wiped one's arse with the left hand. And so to describe something as cack-handed is to say it's clumsy. How does that fit with venstre hånds, Arbeid?
I don't think it connotes clumsy, but it's more like work done badly. Because everyone is, of course, right-handed.
Obviously.
And if you do the work with the left hand, it would be not that good.
Do you do any work with your left hand?
I do all my work with my left hand. No pun intended.
So how do you feel about this word as a left-hander?
I'm deeply offended, of course. And everyone knows that left-handed people are way more creative. And yeah.
So are you reclaiming the word then? Are you taking it back?
I am. Let's make left great again.
Of all the weeks to say that.
This would be the week.
Oh, please, can we edit that out?
Well, we have to take the great again back.
It's going to take a while. I think we're a little scarred here.
Mm. So I chose a new Norwegian word this time.
And when you say new Norwegian, do you mean nynorsk or do you mean it is a new word in Norwegian?
I mean nynorsk, because it's an old word. It's from Old Norse, actually. And it's røynd or røyndom, which is a word for truth or reality.
Ooh. Say more.
You don't have the same word in bokmål. In bokmål it would be virkelighet, which is the same as the German
Wirklichkeit.
Thanks. But the reason I picked it because I didn't learn this word before. I had it in a sociology class in university, actually, where I wasn't made aware of it, which is strange, but yeah.
Can you help me / us with the etymology here? Røyndom.
So, røyndom.
Røyndom.
Røynd.
Røynd. Better? That's hard.
Yeah, much better.
Where do the bits come from? Like, røynd to me sounds like område, almost. Like, not phonologically, but like what it means, what it connotes. It's the around-you-ness. How do we get that, reality from that?
You are venturing into folk etymology now, which is perhaps more interesting than the real one.
Well, what's the real one?
I know only that do you have homework now? I know only that it is from the Norse reind.
Which means?
The same, like reality. The thing that is, or something like that. And the only reason I picked it is I think it's the most interesting word, or it sounds more interesting, is because it's, to me, it sounds almost foreign.
I cannot find a cognate in English. Maybe it'll come to me later. Maybe there isn't one.
I have a tidbit. So I did a bit of Wikipedia-ing. This is a section where we verbalize nouns in English. We believe it's the oldest written language. No, the oldest written word in Norwegian.
Wow.
Mind-blowing.
And it means reality.
Hmm.
Way existential, Old Norwegian. Possible title, Way Existential Old Norwegian.
Possible title. We have mentioned a handful of things during this podcast, and people want to go somewhere to recall and find perhaps a list with links and so on, where would they need to go?
They can go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm and they will find as many things as we can link to in the show notes for this episode, and they will find other episodes as well, and also a link to our Twitter account, Småforskjeller, which means small differences in Norwegian.
And with that, I guess we have to get back to work.
I guess we do. This is a fun way to start the week. How did it work out for you?
I think it's okay. Perhaps we could strive to get it down to 1.5 hour at most, because I have so many Slack messages now. But yeah,
cool.
It's cool.
I think I need to start drinking coffee about an hour earlier than I did today to make this work.
I did.
Pro move.
Right.
Professional podcaster.
And we have to cut this out and close off with the official close off. Ha det bra. Takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.